Now we'll hear from the Honorable Congressman Nick Begich. Nick?
I will agree with some of the speakers who have preceded me. I will disagree with some of the speakers, because I am on the firing line. As we think and dream and work for the future, there is one congressman out of 435 who's got to carry the message where it counts, where the votes are counted. There's no time when you vote in the U.S. Congress or in the state Senate or House here where you can say maybe. There's a yes green and there's a no red, but there's no yellow because we just don't recognize that. And those who are yellow or like to take that middle road position and stand nowhere are the ones who take a walk during the crucial votes. I look at the definition of a native. I want to make sure that that definition that Ken Bass gave today is explained again in the House bill, where the one-quarter degree is recognized, but the other factor, which is very important, that it includes in the definition what a native is, that in the absence of proof of minimum blood quantum, any citizen of the U.S. who is regarded as Alaska Native by the Native village or the Native group of which he claims to be a member and whose father or mother is, or if deceased, was regarded as a Native by the village. And so that lets that decision come closer to home, because in some cases down the Aleutian chain that was a real concern and we wanted to correct that. Somebody said here that in my area we may not get the mineral rights. And it's not fair because another area will get the mineral rights. I want to say that in the bill in the House, it specifically says, in order that all natives may benefit equally from any minerals discovered within a particular region, each corporation must share its mineral revenues with all the other 11 corporations on the basis of the relative numbers of stockholders in each region, so that all benefit, regardless of whether they have refuge rights, or whether they have mineral rights in the refuge area or not. As far as adding names of additional villages that have been left off to the rolls, I think that's an excellent suggestion. The Senate has it, the House does not. We have already found at least three villages left off, not by design, but purely because we took the list from the Federal Field Committee and the only list available that we could get from the Interior Department. And I'm incidentally shocked that the Interior Department didn't know some of these villages existed. Maybe that's why they have forgotten some of the rural areas of this great state. For 6 years that a Native Land Claims Bill has been authored, it has never got out of the Subcommittee of Interior during that entire time. In 6 years, as of last year, it had one day of full executive sessions. Let's look at the record this year. You've had 5 full days of public hearings, and your delegation presented their testimony in excellent form. In addition to that, you had 9 full committee meetings of the Subcommittee of Interior to consider this bill. Only one time of the 9, we did not have a quorum. All the other 8 times, we had on the average 14 to 15 out of 17 members present. And on one occasion, you had 17 out of 17 present. You can't find a subcommittee in the United States Congress that has that kind of attendance average on any piece of legislation. Now that's what's happened in the House Subcommittee of Interior this year under Indian Affairs, chaired by Mr. Haley. We've come a long way in this regard. Now where am I on this whole situation? Because I've heard so many things about that House bill. When I tell you about the progress we have made, the progress could be only made by compromise. You cannot have, as I look at it, as they tell me, all my way. I could not have all my way. Obviously, the committee has 39 members, and I'm one of 39. To save the bill, this bill was dead the last week of July, and the Anchorage Times reported it properly when the headline said the bill is dead. To get that bill out, I had to make certain basic concessions, which your leadership knew and which everybody knew in this state because I broadcast it on radio and television all through this state. It was a 10-point agreement that I had to take around to every member of the major factions and then had to get them signed by those congressmen. And I had to present it, or there would not have been a meeting. This bill was dead, and I had to move then because Mr. Saylor was in the hospital. And with Mr. Saylor present, I doubt whether we'd have a bill at that time, because he had put in 67 amendments to kill this bill. And for 4 days, he killed that bill. and we had to move. And I make no secret about that. He's come around after returning from the hospital, I grant that, and I commended him for that. But the point was we had to move. And the agreement was, number one, that these points of agreement are to be supported in the subcommittee, before the full committee, before the rules committee, and on the floor. That was the basic agreement. And I say that's important because the fate of the bill in the House, and I'm not talking about the Senate bill, the fate of the bill in the House, whether I honor that commitment and whether your leadership honors that commitment made to the chairman. The facts of life happen to be that Alaska's in real dire financial trouble if we don't move oil through that pipeline by 1976. This state has $80 to $100 million already being used in the reserve over and above our taxes that we're getting. And that your 2% also is tied into that pipeline. And we need that pipeline. America needs that pipeline. There's an energy shortage in this country today. We're not going to let them just rampage over the countryside. We're going to move together in developing this great state. We're not going to lock it up, though, because the poorest people in the world today happen to be this generation living right here in this state at this time and in this room at this time. How much longer do we have to keep in that kind of condition? And so I say we are getting tremendous support. Donna's organized as supporting the special interest groups. Yes, oil is getting people interested from Texas in our bill. They were not interested in our bill a year ago. They have a stake. We grant that. We know that. They have a stake, but they are helping us. They are working with Don every day and contacting congressmen. Don's organizing his group. The labor people in the national scene are doing their group. And we meet almost every day. So we are working and moving together. That's the way it ought to go.
Other state and federal officials to address the delegation included Governor William Egan, Speaker of the House Gene Guess, Senator Mike Gravel, and former Attorney General Ramsey Clark. In contrast to Representative Begich's complete demand for support on the House version of a land rights bill, lawyer William Paul, a Tlingit originally from Wrangell and now in Seattle, offered 3 amendments to the House version in an impassioned plea for reconsideration of the bill.
This is my first appearance before this august body, for whom I have the greatest respect. And the reason I have been so long in addressing you is because, to tell the truth, I have been quite frightened. Rather surprising for a man of my experience to say, but you know, I'm approaching my second childhood. And so it takes a longer time for me to screw up my courage so that I might talk to you. On the motion, on the question of unanimous consent, the confidence of this body, this board of directors, I have to object. Because when you look over the bills that are before you, I doubt very much if you have approval of the bills which are now before you. We had a good bill in the very first instance. It's entitled S-2020. That was a good bill. But you'll know that since that time we've been pushed back and back and back until it come to the point where every white statesman comes before you and say, we have a good bill. It reminds me of the story that is told about an Indian and a white man that went hunting in Oklahoma. They went out and they came back with one turkey and one turkey buzzard. The white man said to the Indian, I want to be fair to you, so I will give you a choice. You can have the turkey buzzard and I will take the turkey, or you will take the turkey buzzard and I will take the turkey, or I will take the turkey and you will take the turkey buzzard. Now, which will you have? In listening to the speakers that came before us during the past week, I'll notice this one fact. Nobody talked about the quantity of land which we claim. Nobody said we claim 275 million acres. All they talked about was 40 million acres. The very same people that have produced bill after bill, and every one of them unsatisfactory, with this explanation, and you heard it today, that this is the very best bill that we can have, and therefore we should take a bill that is unsatisfactory because these gentlemen here say that is our very best. And you heard only yesterday or the day before Ramsey Clark tell us that he advised us to take a small amount of acreage and that he was mistaken. And today he says this bill is a good bill, although it is twice as good as the previous bill. In this bill you will find you people that live on the outside, you will find you have no subsistence hunting or fishing. If this bill as it is now passes, you will have no Aboriginal rights for hunting or fishing, no subsistence rights. How are you going to live out in the Bethel area? How are you going to live in the Illiamna area or the Aleutian Island area or any other area if that is not corrected? Take the matter of extinguishment. You will turn your bill and you'll find that your rights, your Aboriginal rights, are extinguished. What does extinguishment mean? It means all your privileges on which you live are gone forever. You take the matter of taxes. Why should you not be free from taxes? As long as you're making a bargain, let's make a good one. Freedom from taxes. While I have downgraded these gentlemen here for a moment, I see they're clapping, and so that I'm also expressing their feelings. While they have a love for you, nevertheless, I think they are misguided more or less because I'm not on the board. Freedom from taxes is a property right. There are families in England that have freedom from taxes for more than 1,000 years, and it is not inconsistent with full citizenship. So I have I've written two or three proposed amendments in the absence of my chairman. Just how these men appoint chairman to committees, I don't know. We have had one meeting in which our chairman was late almost 1 hour. Now I am 76 years old, but I was here at 7:30, ready to work. I am corrected. I'm 176 years old. Where did this come from? All right. Now I have an amendment, and that's one of the troubles I find when you people gather together to do something. You talk, you don't make a motion. And I will, at a suitable time, I will make the following motion to section 21, paragraph 1, and permits hunting and fishing in all unoccupied areas, the proceeds of which may be used in barter, exchange, and gifts in the manner of Aboriginal mode of life. Don't let me forget to make that motion. On page 4, to the definition of public lands, add to line 12, or lands not adjudged, extinguished by the decision of the Court of Claims in the Clingett and Haida case. Now this refers to particularly to southeastern Alaska, which is the area in which I was born and raised, although I now live in Seattle. We have a decision in the Trinket and Haida case in which we were told that we have lost our forestry lands. That decision should have been appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States. But on the argument that if we agreed to take $7.5 million for $700 million worth of timber, we would get our money sooner, and we would help the Alaska Federation of Labor of Natives to carry on their legislation. But we did not give the AFN any money. We did not help them with their legislation until recently. And through my motion, they got an authorization for $250,000. That is the amount of confidence which I had in these gentlemen here. That case should have been appealed because an executive order does not extinguish Indian rights. Keep that in mind. From the beginning, my family has educated all the lawyers of Alaska. We know more about Indian rights, Aboriginal rights, than the whole mess of lawyers in the state of Alaska. What's the matter with you people? We know more than anybody about this subject. And an executive order does not extinguish your rights. So you people that live in the Shugach area and other areas, the Bird areas down in the Bethel area, those proclamations do not take your Aboriginal rights. And if you will fight for your rights, it will be demonstrated. Indian rights, Aboriginal rights are primary. We have the best rights in law in all of the United States, because we have the first rights. And that has been demonstrated many times. I want to offer one more. On page 3, section paragraph 5, line 3, no provision of this act shall constitute a precedent for reopening, renegotiating, or legislating upon any settlement involving land claims or other matters with any Native organization. The thing that the United States and our senators want and our representatives want, they want to put an end to Aboriginal rights. As far as I'm concerned, I want Aboriginal rights, and I'm only willing to give up what I have to give. And I am not going to propose a bill less than what I want. If Congress wants to cut my wishes down, let Congress do it. But don't go before Congress with a poor bill, something like the one that we have now. There's one thing more. It seems to me that your leaders are coming before you as if they were afraid. They are barring from weakness. Basically, we own the land. It is our land. And I'm not going to go before Congress and tell them I want only 40 million acres. I want 275 million, not 80 million, or 60 million, or 40 million. Now, suppose the bill is defeated. How are you hurt? How long that land has stayed there, and it's still there, and it's still valuable, and it is more valuable now than ever. How are you going to be hurt if this bill fails? So don't be afraid. In a way, I'm talking contrary to my opinion of my noble son. But after all, I have to talk my own convictions. I think I have been in this Indian land fight longer than anybody else. And as I, starting from the very beginning, I have learned the mistakes I made are the mistakes that the Tlingitan Haiders made. The mistakes that the Tlingitan Haiders made are the mistakes that you have made. And we are learning as we go along. One thing I have learned, and that is this. We own the land. It is our land. The United States is bargaining with us. And the men that advise you to put that Alyeska pipeline through, it is not your advantage to let that go through until the land question is settled. So don't be afraid.
Mr. Paul received a standing ovation, as had Congressman Begich, but his counsel was ignored. Instead, a motion was made by Charlie Edwardson, Jr., Executive Director of the Arctic Slope Native Association, to support the Board of Directors of the AFN in the original AFN position of acceptance of the Senate version of the bill. The motion passed with few nays. Immediately after the vote, Emil Nadi moved to recess the convention and go into executive session. Chairman, AFN President Don Wright acted quickly without clarifying the motion or permitting discussion, and the motion passed by scanty voice vote. Clearly, not all delegates had understood what was going on. However, Wright recessed the convention. Then came much excited outburst by delegates who felt they had been denied their right to speak their mind and present their resolutions in open session. Parliamentary procedure was largely abandoned, with the exception of Wright's several repetitions that the convention was in recess until November, and no one was formally recognized by him.
Chairman, I move for reconsideration of Emil Nadi's
motion. We're in recess, and there is no reconsideration.
Mr. Chairman, I move for division of the House on that last ballot amendment.
I'm sorry, but we're in recess. The convention, insofar as Fairbanks is concerned, is over. At the call of the chair, we shall reconvene in Anchorage.
In the ensuing verbal altercations, Wright walked out of the convention and was succeeded as chairman by First Vice President Philip Guy, who had been among the most outraged at Wright's actions. Shortly after Guy took over as chairman, the delegates voted to reconsider Nadi's motion to recess, which had caused all the confusion.
At this time, is our secretary ready to do the roll?
Tlingit and Haida, A and B, 104 votes.
Southeast organization cast 104 votes, but invited the people to be heard. We vote yes on reconsideration.
Bethel area, 114 votes.
Bethel area, 114 votes, yes.
Bristol Bay, 31 votes.
Bristol area, 31
votes, yes. Kenai, 7 votes.
Kenai votes, no, 7 votes.
7 votes, no, Kenai. Copper River, 4 votes.
When all the votes were in, the final tally was 511 votes in favor of reconsidering the motion to recess and 56 votes opposed. And then Mr. Nadi withdrew his original motion. Tension was high. The convention was back in business and a motion was passed to exclude all press and non-natives. The AFN convention parliamentarian and others were asked to comment on the proceedings.
How do I feel it's going?
Yes.
Well, I think they're on the right track now. I think there may have been a misunderstanding on the original motion. It's quite obvious at the second vote that there was a misunderstanding, and that would be the only basis on reconsideration. Technically and legally, Don Wright was right when he said, as he interpreted the vote as it came the first time around, that a majority carried and that the convention was at that point in recess. However, the only basis for, and I think one of the mistakes perhaps would be recognizing anybody at all after a recess, if a recess was in fact in existence at that particular time, then no one should have been recognized. Do you follow me?
I follow you, yes. The fact that people were recognized
after
is that...
After the recess, right.
Right. Is that against parliamentary procedure, or in this case, is it acceptable?
Well, it is against parliamentary procedure normally, but I think the chairman didn't know what the people had in mind, and so he decided he would hear them out. This, of course, opened up the floor to other persons who felt perhaps they had some to express themselves, you know, and that's why it dragged like a drag.
Would you comment on the fact that Don Wright left and the vice president took over? Is this according to the procedures?
Well, of course, that was his own choosing to leave at that particular time. He felt that legally he was right and that the convention was in recess at that time. So, and he felt, as he interpreted, he was free to leave. The convention was in recess. The motion was that he would reconvene it at his call, and the call was contingent on passage of a land claims bill.
Mr. Willard, could you give me your opinion on the proceedings up to this time in the convention?
You mean what took place this afternoon?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I think what it all means to me is that the people have regained control of the convention.
Mr. Borbidge, could you give me your opinion on the proceedings?
Well, I think basically the people in the convention who have come from the outlying villages have expressed their strong desire to be informed and to be directly involved to the extent of being able to satisfactorily express what is on their hearts and their minds concerning the land claims. I think there's a realization that this land claims is more than a bill. It will not only confirm the extent of the rights the natives have, it will forever extinguish certain rights that they have. And because of this, I think there was perhaps some misunderstanding on a motion today to recess the meeting. The convention will simply be going back into session. And I think the primary intent of the convention will be at this point to hear the people out and to have the people express themselves once more on the point of what their position is. And I'm reasonably certain that the position will be the AFN position, which has not been altered as of this date.
AFN President Don Wright regained control of the meeting after the convention went into executive session and had affirmed support of his presidency. He comments on the mood of the 6th Annual Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Fairbanks as it recessed in the early evening of October 10th.
The Alaska Federation of Natives restated its support for the terms of Senate Bill 835. They're going to continue to work in the lobby effort in Washington to do the best they can to get the contents of that bill incorporated in legislation pending before the Senate.
Al Ketzler, president of the Tanana Chiefs, and Joe Upickson, president of the Arctic Slope Native Association.
We may have had differences of opinion, you know, but we're very unified in our efforts to achieve a land claims bill that will give justice to all the Native people.
Thank you, Mr. Ketzler. Mr. Upickson, would you tell me the ASNA's position inside of the organization of the AFN?
Well, as far as the Alaska Federation of Natives is concerned, our involvement in it is that we totally support Don Wright in his lobbying efforts in Washington, D.C., and we appreciate it. Golly, you spent a lot of time away from home, and you're in front of the firing line. When you get back, what you actually would like is at least some understanding. Somebody was there and cared.
How come we can't talk to each other anymore? Why can't you see I'm changing too? We've got 5 foot too long to end it beating Rome, and I still share too much with you. Just one great river always flowing to the sea. Just one great river always rolling to eternity. Two nations in a land that lies along its shores, but just one river, you and me. How come you shut me up as if I wasn't there? What's this new bitterness you found? However wronged you were, however deep the hurt, it wasn't me that held you down. Just one great river always flowing to the sea. Just one great river always rolling to eternity. Two nations in a land that lies along its shores, but just one river, you and me. Why can't you understand? I'm glad you're standing proud. I know you made it on your own, but in this pride you've earned, I thought you might have learned that you don't have to stand alone.
You have been listening to a special report on the 6th Annual Convention of the Alaskan Federation of Natives, held October 8th, 9th, and 10th, 1971, at the Travelers Inn in Fairbanks, Alaska. This program was written and narrated by Karen McPherson and produced by Roger McPherson, using the facilities of KUAC-FM.
Just one great river always flowing to the sea. Just one great river always rolling to eternity. Two nations in a land that lies along its shores, but just one river, you and me.